shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello once again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. This is the February 3rd, 2021 edition. Glad you could tune in. Great to have you along with me as we continue our look back at the historic 2005 hurricane season, not only from the perspective of the storms and the hurricanes that we had that year, but also the things that I was working on with my group, with Jesse, with Mike, and this episode is going to delve into that. I just got finished with Hurricane Dennis, with Jesse. We tested out the live camera system. The Tahoe cam was working well. The wind tower, buoy, behemoth, whatever was working well. We had a good plan in place. And I had this feeling that the rest of the 05 season was going to be very, very busy. And I decided, instead of making 2005 sort of a test bed season for live video, I was confident enough in what we had and I didn't want to miss out on this potential extraordinary opportunity. So after Dennis, I spent the next couple of weeks working very quickly to come up with a grand plan of how to roll this out for the world. It'll be the world premiere of live video from inside of a hurricane. And honestly, nobody had ever done this before. And I have to emphasize that this is one of the few really big bragging points that I can sort of hang my hat on forever. Nobody will ever be able to take this away. And that is the fact that once we got to Katrina, and we'll get there, we were going to unleash the world's first live video from remote cameras, from the Tahoe, a vehicle cam, and it was going to truly be an historic moment. But I had to get there first. I had to develop the interface, the portal. How were people going to be able to consume this, so to speak, to view it? How was that going to work out? I had to solve those problems. I had to amass the remaining equipment needed, a few technical things and some budgetary things I had to figure out. And I would again rely on Paul Bowman, Jesse Bass to bounce ideas off of, and of course, Mike Watkins. And between the four of us, yes, once we got to the end of August, when Katrina became Katrina, we would be ready. But before then, and that's again what we're going to get into in this episode, I had to build the infrastructure to make it happen. And that's where we will go in this exciting episode, once again, of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right, so let's do a quick recap of exactly what the equipment is that we're using to do the live video. We have the Tahoe and we have an unmanned camera box. So the first thing is the Tahoe. We're using a Sony Handycam, a Firewire cable that connects that Handycam to a Sony Vaio. The Sony Vaio has a Sprint air card, and that is how we get the signal out, the stream out, whatever. And we're using Windows Media Encoder to do that. And it's all powered by the inverter that is built into the Chevy Tahoe. We had that done custom in 2003. And we, as long as the Tahoe would run, we had power. The laptop, the Vaio, never left the Tahoe. It was like a small office in there, if you will. And so we had a vehicle cam, and it had audio with it, as I mentioned, and it worked great. So we wanted to be able to miniaturize all of that and have an unmanned version. And as I've talked about in the previous episode that we tested during Hurricane Dennis, we had our first unmanned camera box. And that consisted of two bullet cams. One was a daytime cam for daytime landfalls. The other was a nighttime camera. And it had zero lux capability, as they call it, with these little LED illumination things for seeing in total darkness, maybe 50 to 100 feet if we were lucky. And these cameras, whichever one we were going to use, didn't matter. Well, it did matter, but you know, if it's a daytime landfall, we use the daytime camera, obviously. But they were 60-foot cables. We fed them into the box, this black Pelican case, or Storm case is the brand name. Fairly large, like I said, almost like a small foot locker. And it was about a 3/4 inch hole or so that these cables would fit through from the outside. And the cables terminated with, like if you looked at the end of the cable, one end is the camera and the other end is this little, the cable splits. And there's this little power supply that you plug a brick into. It's called a wall wart, a little cable with a little brick at the end of it that you plug in. And that was one of the splits of the cable. And then the other one was a BNC connection. It's just a standard of video connection that's out there. So I'd get a BNC to RCA female to put it on there. And then I'd get RCA cables to take the video signal and route it into a VCR. Why the VCR? Well, this is complicated, I know, but this is very, very important on a lot of levels. So stick with me here. So the video signal is going to go into a VCR. Why the VCR? Well, let's go back to the media encoder, Windows Media Encoder. We're going to use that. We had been using that since February. Remember, we learned how to do that from Jim Williams and his friend who became our mutual friend, Ross at suncam.tv. Ross, of course, had been streaming over Windows Media Encoder and the Sprint Network for some time. I learned how to do it, so that's what we were going to use. Windows Media Encoder was the key to this, but the bit rate, because Sprint was only at about 3G speeds at this time, maybe 144 kilobits per second, 144,000 bits per second, I think was the fastest that it would go, something like that. And it's not like we have now with 4G LTE and 5G that's, you know, slowly rolling out. But it worked. And so the bit rate and the frame size and all of that with Windows Media Encoder, we settled on, after extensive testing, 180 by 120, and a bit rate, the actual sample rate of streaming, was about 30, maybe 40 kilobits per second. 20 to 30 to 40, just depending on the area, you know, that was about it. So a small screen size, you know, normal DVD resolution of something is 720 by 480. And so we were down at 180 by 120. And so that is what, about a third or a fourth of that? I can't remember off the top of my head the fractions, but, you know, it's a fairly small video size and a low bit rate, you know, the sample rate. The quality was just good enough that it would work. And at about 10 to 12 frames per second, normal resolution video is 29.97 frames per second. Most movies that you see are shot at 24 frames per second, unless they're digital. Then you can get 30, 36, even 48 frames per second in the modern era. Just to give you an idea, we were talking about 10 to 12 frames per second. This is what we had to do to get it to work, because we're trying to push out live video over this 3G network that existed in 2005. So the VCR comes into the equation to intercept the video signal from whichever bullet cam we're going to use first. So try to envision the RCA cable that's male on both ends, as they call it. It's a yellow cable. You guys that know video and audio, you know, the yellow is video, the red and white are audio for left and right channels. Well, we're not using audio with these bullet cams. It doesn't exist. So we just have a yellow video cable, RCA. It's male on both ends. And you plug one end into the BNC to RCA female. And that's what they call it, just telling you. And then the other end goes into the auxiliary input RCA female in, the yellow video in, on the front of the VCR, which happened to be a Super VHS, SVHS. It was just a little bit better resolution, higher density magnetic tape, I guess. You know, it was just better. And I could get a 9-hour tape for this. And that was it. That's all I would be able to do. And it would record in full resolution, whatever it was, you know, broadcast quality, more or less. 720 by 480, 30 frames per second, whatever, you know, like whatever the video signal was, the VCR would record it and it would look pretty good. Not as good as we have today with 4K, 8K, whatever. I get it, but this was a good start. It really was. So the VCR had 9 hours. That's it. So we basically had to assume that we would set this up so that the worst of the hurricane would happen within that 9-hour window. The laptop would stream all of this and be powered by the battery that's sitting in this giant box, the storm case. The whole operation would run for about 15, maybe 18 hours off of this giant 50, 60, 70 pound AGM battery. It's a 105 amp hour battery from a company called Lifeline. We'd had an inverter that attached to it through these alligator clips, and then like an air conditioning cord, nice heavy duty cord, and then one of those contractor multiple outlet blocks that gave us 4 outlets. We'd plug the VCR, the laptop, and the bullet cam all into this block and power everything. Yes, it's very complicated. Now you understand, you know, there's a lot that can go wrong. But when it works, and we hoped that it would be spectacular. It was worth all of this craziness, right? But it's a simple concept. You have video, got to get the video into the VCR, out of the VCR, out the back, you had an output. You could run the video out and then take the video signal using the VCR basically as a pass-through slash recording device. So the VCR, to make it clear, would record and pass the video signal through it. It was an amazing coincidence, really. This VCR, I still have a couple of them in my garage. I ought to auction them off someday as collector's items. I do. I still have the original ones from back when all this started in 05. We'll talk about that later. But these VCRs did a really good job of passing the video signal through and recording. So the video signal goes through, and then that video signal goes into the Dazzle. That is the digitizing device that gets the video signal into the laptop that then streams it out at 180 by 120, 30, 40 kilobits per second, 10, 12 frames per second. Voila, you got live video. So again, the recap there, maybe not as short as I thought it would be, but that is what we're dealing with. It's on the surface seemingly extremely complex. A lot of wires, a lot of pieces of this puzzle. But the fact remains, it worked. We had it working. We tested the vehicle cam. We tested this one unmanned camera during Dennis. I was impressed. I was convinced. And I was ready now to make this available and present it to the world, so that we could bear witness to what happens when especially a really bad high-impact hurricane makes landfall somewhere, that I figured I had solved the problem of seeing what happens in the worst of these situations. This was the answer to that problem. Now, how do we get it out to the rest of the world? So now that we have a way to stream live video from a vehicle and an unmanned camera system, the next logical step is to get more unmanned camera systems, first of all, and then figure out a way to get this out to the world. How am I going to stream this so that everybody can see it who wants to see it, who knows about it? And that was a challenge. It really was, because we didn't have a reliable CDN, which is Content Delivery Network, already established. You know, now, 17 years later, YouTube is, you know, everybody knows about YouTube. You can stream live on YouTube. We do that now. We use those Nest cams and we stream those live on YouTube. You can stream live on Twitter. You can stream live on Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Streaming live in 2021 is second nature for pretty much everybody. Back in 2005, it was not. And there's a couple of interesting side things that were going on. First of all, did you know that YouTube started on Valentine's Day of 2005, February of 05? And coincidentally, it was February of 05 that I learned about how to stream live video. The two were totally unrelated at the time. Now they are completely related, but I digress. Just an interesting coincidence there. But it's true, YouTube was founded and sort of flipped the switch to go live, if you will, even though they didn't do live video. But you know what I'm saying. The website went up. Hey, we're here. It's YouTube. That was Valentine's Day 2005. But they didn't have a way to do live video, not even close. There was no iPhone. That would still be 2 years later that the first iPhone would come out in 07. And even though Facebook, you know, basically started in 04, by 05, it was still basically and probably only prestigious .edu addresses, Stanford, Harvard, the Ivy League schools, you know, whatever. It didn't grow. If you follow the story, there's a book about it called The Accidental Billionaires, and they made a movie about it called The Social Network. But, you know, we're just at the beginning of all of this. We being a society, and we, my group, Mark, Jesse, Mike Watkins, Paul Bowman helping out, right? This small group of us, Jason, my longtime childhood friend, helping to program some things. You know, we had this small little group for my fairly popular website, HurricaneTrack.com, occupying a certain corner of the internet universe, I guess. You know, I mean, we were making progress. All the while, big watershed changes are happening on the internet itself. But live streaming video was difficult. And to give you an idea of how limited it was, CNN was going to launch in the summer of 05. I think it was the summer. I know it was 05 because it was another interesting coincidence. They were going to launch live video on the internet. No, they didn't have it back then, believe it or not. It's like I said, now live video is everywhere. CNN was going to launch something called Pipeline, CNN Pipeline. It was going to be a subscription-based method of delivering four feeds at once through like a pipeline. That's, you know, the metaphor here. And it might be just a raw feed of whoever, wherever, whatever, anything, global. And maybe it would be some of their programming. And you can look it up. I'm sure it's in the archives of the internet, CNN Pipeline, the history of it. And it was going to be four different feeds of just unscripted, here's what's happening, it's a pipeline to whatever. And it would be live. They were going to ask about $24.95 a year for it, I do believe. I don't think it was a month, I think it was an annual subscription. And I thought that was really interesting. Oh, wow, CNN's going to start doing some live stuff. You know, this whole live phenomenon was starting to come around. But again, finding a CDN, Content Delivery Network, to host your live whatever was expensive and difficult because it was not commonplace. The more commonplace something becomes, the less expensive and the less cumbersome it usually becomes as well as that evolution progresses. So what we had done, myself working with Paul and Jesse and Jason and Mike, the group of us, mostly though with myself and Paul, because Paul had his finger on the pulse of all of this stuff. He had his own internet company in Pahrump, providing Wi-Fi to Pahrump through his company called Air Internet. Great name, by the way. And he knew a lot about encoding. You know, we talked about this before when we had Paul on, but Paul was a tech geek and very reliable for bouncing ideas off of. And so during a vacation that I took with my family in late July of 05 to the Outer Banks, they would all be tuckered out and hit the sack, and I'd stay up sitting out on the balcony with my headset on, plugged into my phone, didn't have Bluetooth back then like we do now, and I would just chat with Paul about what could we do with this? How can we get this out to the world? And we would look on different websites as to who does live video. You know, we knew we were using Windows Media. There was also Flash encoding through Adobe, but we weren't using that. There was a Flash media encoder that you could use, and some of the media companies were going to do that. We were using Windows Media Encoder, of course, as I talked about. And so we stumbled across this company called PlayStream, and they offered hosted live streaming. So you would provide them a source of the live stream. They had a whole protocol on how you could do that, and you would pay them not by hours streamed or anything. It was, you know, literal bandwidth, and you would have a plan, 1 gigabyte, 5 gigabytes, 20 gigabytes, whatever, and you'd just pay for the amount of bandwidth you used, not necessarily the upstream side, but, you know, the consumer side. So if you're going to have a live stream of a hurricane and 40 people watch and they're all watching a 40 kilobits per second stream for X amount of hours, you can start to figure out how much bandwidth that's going to take. And we literally had to do that. Now, fortunately, PlayStream had a bandwidth calculator. You figure out your audience size, your estimated audience size, your bit rate that you're going to deliver. You know, what's the resolution and the bit rate of the stream? And they would tell you approximately how many gigabytes you're going to use. And then you could figure out which plan you wanted. So we had settled on PlayStream earlier in the month of June for some testing, and tested it in July during Dennis, and even probably doing some driving at some of those Lowe's Hurricane Fair events. Very limited testing, didn't put much money into it, would occasionally embed the Windows Media Player on HurricaneTrack.com, so, you know, a few people could tune in and watch. You know, we might email some people. There's no social media. You don't put it on Twitter. Didn't exist yet. So we, you know, we did limited testing through PlayStream, and we found that it seemed to work okay. And it would create a Windows Media video live stream from our source. And the source was the Tahoe and the unmanned camera. And then I thought, well, let's get two more of these unmanned cameras, and we'll have four sources, and I can build a page, kind of like what CNN's going to do, that'll have four slots on it, you know, a quad panel. And each quarter of the page would have a camera. The upper left would be the Tahoe cam, and then camera 1, 2, 3 of the unmanned cams. Bingo, that's how it's going to look. We started to design the interface in our brains, you know, just talking about it. And we would spend hours talking about this. And then I thought, well, if we're going to do that, maybe there's a way that we can incorporate weather data underneath the stream, directly underneath it, using Java. And that's an old programming language. So I turned to my friend Jason, our programming buddy, my friend from grade school, like I said, and said, hey, look, if I buy several of these Davis weather stations and run them into the laptop using the software that they have called Davis Link, I think is what it's called, and it would include wind, pressure, temperature, humidity, dew point, can you bring that data file in and display it underneath these three camera streams that I'm going to have? And he said, probably, you know, you got to do it and try it. So I bought, and this is what was incredible. After that vacation, I went back, got home, probably right at the end of July there, and I ordered just an insane amount of stuff. And I had the funding, as I've mentioned before, through Lowe's and Sprint. That was not a problem. The research and development money was there. So I ordered 3 Davis Weather Monitor 2 complete weather stations, the data loggers that go with them, got the license for the CDs you'd get for the weather link, the Davis link, whatever it was called, that you use to send that data. I bought 2 more laptops, 2 more, well, 4 total bullet cams, more VCRs, more batteries, just more of everything. So eventually all of this stuff showed up at my house in Leland, North Carolina, where I lived at the time. And I started assembling everything. And it was just some of the best fun I've ever had in my career, because I knew that this was going to be groundbreaking. Sometimes you don't know that you're doing something important. It just ends up being important. And sometimes you do know, or you have a really good idea. At least you think it's there, and you won't know until you try it. But this is something that I had been working on since the year 2000, when Dr. Steve Lyons challenged me, you know, is there a way that we can send video signals back from the barrier islands during hurricanes? He was still at the Weather Channel in the year 2000. I say still, he started, I think, in 1999 or so. And this was a real problem for Dr. Lyons, knowing that Jim Cantore, Mike Seidel, whomever, was going to be out there in harm's way. Can we get them off the beaches and just send a video signal back? That all began in the year 2000 with that question from Dr. Lyons, who had become a friend of mine, you know, just working with him at various events over the years, the National Hurricane Conference, so forth. You know, we meet people, we become friends, and they embraced what I did and so forth. And this was something that I would really, really had wanted to do, 5 years in the making, and I knew this was it. It's going to work, you know, one way or the other. So I was very excited to assemble everything, put all this stuff together, and it all was finally done. It took a couple of days of, you know, drilling holes, putting things together. Just the it's too bad I didn't have somebody document that process. That would have been cool. But when it was all said and done, I had 3 black storm cases that were identical. Each of them had an Inspiron laptop from Dell. Each of them had a big Lifeline battery, 105 amp hour. They all had the same inverter, the same cables, the same VCRs, the same cameras, the same weather stations. They were hooked in there. These little cup anemometers would give us wind speed and direction. The Davis console would sit inside the case. The case had enough, the way that these cases were, they were airtight, but not airtight to where the atmospheric pressure wouldn't change. It's just there's this valve on the case that you can twist, and it would at least let the air pressure in and out without letting water get in there, you know, as long as you don't sink it to the bottom of the Atlantic. It's complicated. It's how these different cases work. It's called an IP rating. But nevertheless, we were going to have weather data and live video. And to make it even more complicated, I mean, why stop there? I even had a Logitech little egg-shaped, I remember, literally like an egg with a little tripod on it, webcam that we would send an image in case the video didn't work. Like, I was going all in on this. We're going to have live video, that's the Holy Grail. We're going to have weather data through Davis. It was just too expensive to go and get a bunch of RM Young equipment. The Davis stations were just a few $100s each, so that was a lot more affordable. So we're going to have a live video, the weather data, and then a little webcam, you know, that would send an image about every minute. 640 by 480, I think, was the image size. Maybe it might have been 320 by some whatever, 180 or something, right? Or 120. But whatever, we're going to have a webcam image. Like, make it as complicated as possible, but I wanted it to work. I'm like, okay, let's do it. So now we needed, to get these accounts with PlayStream and commit to a certain level. and you know the Tahoe cam would stream, and I said, okay, we're going to do 10 gigabytes, and I don't even remember how much it was. It was a certain amount per month, and then if you went over, they would charge you 10 cents per megabyte overage or whatever, who knows, but they would charge you an overage if you went over. And that's the decision that I made. At the end of July, the very first of August, after working all of this out, ordering the equipment, assembling everything, I decided I'm going to put all of this out there on the internet, on Hurricane Track, and I made a blog about it, I think on August 1st or so, right around there. I wrote a blog about it, announcing what we were going to do, and that I was going to have to charge money for people to watch. And I explained it, how exciting it was, that the fee that I would charge, and I wasn't sure what that fee would be yet, I still had to work that out, was only going to be to offset the cost of doing it. That this was revolutionary, never been done before. I even mentioned, I think, the CNN pipeline thing, that you know CNN is doing something similar, not for hurricanes, but just for news gathering and news dissemination or whatever. And they're going to charge a fee. And, you know, this is the way of the future. You know, we don't know how this is going to work. And I posted this blog in, within like a couple of hours. And remember, again, there's no push notifications. I mean, I could have an email list probably, but I didn't. But there's no, you didn't get notified. And when I say I did a blog, I need you to understand it wasn't through WordPress, you know, where you got an RSS feed. We may or may not have had those back then. But people just went to HurricaneTrack.com regularly. And so it only took a couple of hours after I posted this blog, I started getting emails, and most of them were negative. People were disappointed. Well, you know, what was free? All these years, you started it in 1999, it only took, what, 6 years now, and you're wanting to charge money. Goodbye, it's been nice knowing you. I mean, the backlash was insane from probably a third of the responses that I got. And back then, remember, it's all email. You didn't have a reply on Twitter, you know, or a comment on Facebook. It didn't exist. It was email. People sat down and literally, you know, typed an email, and some of those people were not happy. And I realize now, and I realized then, after the shock wore off, that, wow, I've upset some people, that they didn't understand. They thought that I was doing this to profit from, and I thought that I made it clear that I wasn't, that I don't know how much this will cost to do, first of all, so I've got to have some way to control it. You know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, I responded and told them that, and a few of them, oh, okay, I didn't understand, was their response. I get it now. Yeah, this sounds exciting. Okay, keep me posted. And then, you know, some people I never heard from, and maybe one or two that are whatever. You know how some people just are angry with the world, and they will come up with any excuse to be upset, and they wouldn't hear about it. If it's not free, it sucks. You know, it's the way they thought. And, you know, you can't please everybody. So I decided, in the interest of not upsetting the apple cart, that I would simply create a brand new website for this project. And since we had this network, or NET for short, and it was live during hurricanes, I bought the domain name Hurricane Live Net for Hurricane Live Network, hurricanelivenet.com. Very early August, maybe I bought it at the end of July. I don't remember exactly, but I think Paul and I came up with that. We were thinking, what can we call this? What can we call this? Somewhere around there, those details are foggy. And I guess it would be around the time that I did the blog and I got the backlash. But nevertheless, that is what I settled on. And I was like, all right, we'll make it separate. And it'll be its own experimental site. We'll see what happens with it. And it'll be related to and tied into Hurricane Track, but not officially part of it. It'll be a spinoff. And that should keep people happy. And I got a guy who emailed me saying, hey, I do web design, would love to help you with this. And I cannot remember his name. I've racked my brain thinking about it. I just don't remember. And it bothers me that I don't remember. But he was in Alabama, I think in the town of Florence, Alabama. And he offered and volunteered to code the site and make it look real nice for the day. And he did. He coded it up, got everything ready. I worked with Jason. We were going very fast on this, early August, you know, because the season is really going to crank up here, right? And it was only a few days in, maybe by August 10th or so, everything was ready. And Jason was working on the weather data side, how to get the data into the server. We knew how to get it into the server. That was done through the Davis Weather Link or whatever it was called. But how to get the data displayed on the website. Everything was coming together. And finally, it was all there. And I announced it. I said, here it is. So everything was ready to go. We were ready to launch it. And I decided on the plan. It would be $9.95 just to peek in and watch one storm. You know, you want to see what it's all about. It's about $10. Sign up through PayPal. We had a whole system in place to do all this. And you would log in and you could watch one event. And basically like a 10-day pass is what we set up. Or you could sign up for the entire season for $24.95 for the year. And I believe those are the only two plans that I had. I could go back and look, but I believe that's what I had. And I announced it and put it out there. And within the first few hours, a few people signed up, you know, and I'd get a notification through PayPal, you know, that Fred Smith just signed up for Hurricane LiveNet or whatever we called it. We had an item code, and it was remarkable. We set up this entire infrastructure to have subscribers to this system to basically be a part of history, to help crowdfund. That word really wasn't in vogue yet. But that's what it was. You're going to help crowdfund this so that I can afford to do it. Because I have to emphasize again, there was no way that I could just put this on the HurricaneTrack.com homepage, even just one camera embedded on the homepage for all to see for free, and there's a big hurricane coming, I would get a bill from PlayStream for thousands of dollars. And no one's going to bail me out. And it would shut the whole enterprise down. It was possible, if it was popular enough, we did some calculating, that I could get a bill for over 20 grand if I wasn't careful. It wouldn't take too many thousands of people watching to rack up unbelievable bandwidth charges from PlayStream. And that would be the end of it. And Lowe's and Sprint, there was no way I could get them to bankroll this because I couldn't give them a budget because I had no idea of how popular or not it would be because nobody had ever done this before. So you see my dilemma. This is why I had to create a paywall just to prop it up and just to make sure it would work. So everything was ready. We set it up. Hurricane LiveNet was online, ready to go. It looked slick thanks to this programming that this gentleman had done for me from Alabama, and we were just waiting, you know. All right, now we need something to do it in, you know, some impetus to put all this out there and show you that it works. We had a couple of dozen people that signed up, and one or two of them lives right here in Wilmington. I'll just use their first names. Martha was one of them, and then Barbara was another one. I remember those distinctly. And they were some of the first, and I could go back and look and tell you like who the first people were. That's actually in a database, but maybe we'll put that in a book one day. But, we had a log file of all the email addresses and the first and last name of everybody that signed up. And that's how we, you know, did the database for, so you could log in, and it started to grow. You know, we had, like I said, a couple dozen people by mid-August. And it was just a waiting game at this point. But to sort of summarize this all up and wrap it up, everything we had done since February learning how to live stream at all, the testing, the successes of testing here, testing there. Are we going to do it on Wi-Fi? Are we going to do it over Sprint? Everything fell into place. You know, we got into the spring and the summer, the first hurricanes, everything fell into place. We got into the spring and the summer, and we had our first hurricane landfall there with Dennis, did that limited testing, and this was it. This was like, okay. And, you know, I was nervous. It's like, this could be an epic disaster that just doesn't work at all, and I was really hyping it up to be the world's answer to witnessing what happens in a hurricane safely at point-blank range, that it did not matter in terms of the cameras how strong the hurricane was and how bad the effects were. Yes, the Sprint network could get knocked off, and we can't see it live, but my backup was those VCRs, and that is extremely important to remember. Make a note of that. Each of the three boxes had a VCR inside that would record for 9 hours no matter what. That was my backup. That was my black box to the black box, literally. This was so exciting that Max Mayfield got behind it. I emailed him about it. I sent him some pictures. And he said, you know, like, not publicly, like, to the world, but he told me, this is a project that I can endorse. This I can get behind. If you need help from us deploying these, you know, if someone gives you grief about going into an area to set these up, we will help you because this we can endorse. You're going to leave the cameras and then you're going to get out of there. That was the understanding. And that's what these were for. So I had the unofficial blessing of the National Hurricane Center. And it was Max and the deputy director at the time, Ed Rappaport. Dr. Jack Bevan knew about it. I mean, this was really exciting, groundbreaking. And now we just needed an opportunity to prove that it worked. And that opportunity would come a couple of weeks later as Hurricane Katrina would make history, not only for us, but for the world, as we all know. Probably going to span several episodes as we have a lot to talk about when we get into Katrina. The Florida landfall first, then the Gulf Coast landfall, all of these amazing stories in between. We will get Mike Watkins back, Jesse Bass coming in again, Paul Bowman, all of us to kind of talk about that truly historic benchmark moment, not only in the evolution of what we were doing with these unmanned cameras, but the event itself, how it made us feel, the impact that it had on our lives, and just the nature of it. You know, one of the most significant hurricane impacts in United States history. We will delve into that starting with the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right. Well, that is it for me. I am Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. We'll do it all again next week as we begin the saga of Hurricane Katrina.